Are you kidding? Oh no, really? As usual, when they leave things to me, I have a tendency to go through Bubba's work, all his old papers, and I try to find something that pertains to things that might be interesting for you all. And I just came across this paper. I had actually planned on maybe one or two other things, but this paper is very pertinent to the time we're in at the moment, because it starts, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'll read it for you. We have just finished our fast during the blessed month of Ramadan. May Allah Most High accept your efforts, and may your experience with austerity leave some beneficial trace on your days after Ramadan. The principle of Ramadan is to learn discipline, the principle of Ramadan is to discipline oneself, to discipline oneself for Allah's sake. This is called Riyazat. Riyazat is the attempt to bring both the flesh and the ego into a state of obedience, a state of humbleness, in order to make it possible for us to live our lives as good servants to our Lord. Our ego loves its independence, and it loves even more to lead us to revolt against divine ordinances. Usually, the discipline undertaken to educate the ego into obeying Allah involves denying its wishes while subjecting it to hunger, unpleasant experiences, austerity, difficulties, and suffering, until it learns to face these difficulties and accept them easily. Only then are we able to free ourselves from lives consisting merely of habits. Only then can we wake up from the sleep of heedlessness, assume divine morals and character, and be in harmony with the divine harmony. However, one of the principles of Sufism is to reform people painlessly, in such a way that they like what they are doing. Thus, the best means of developing discipline in the ego is not to fight it, but instead we first try to understand it, enter into conversation with it, so as to learn its wishes. Then we can let it have the harmless things it wants, but less of them than it wants. And we can try to reason with it while we deny its unlawful demands. Meanwhile, we undertake to convince the ego that the pleasures of spiritual life are better than the fun and games of the habitual worldly life. But to be able to feel the beauty of the spiritual life, our being has to be cleansed of habits. And the way to get rid of habits is to reduce the worldly involvement in our lives. Indeed, it makes sense. We need to create a space in ourselves that belongs to what is spiritual. And to clear that space, we have to empty it of our everyday worldly desires. Riyazat is not just thoughts, meditation, and intention. It is a matter of action, and actions are of two sorts. They are visible, exterior actions, physical and material, such as praying and fasting, paying alms and going to pilgrimage, and doing good deeds. These are all there are also invisible, interior ones, such as endurance of pain and difficulties, patience, contentment with less of the pleasant things of life, satisfaction with what one has without wishing for more, cheerfulness in the face of the bitter complaints of the ego, and to a certain extent withdrawal from society at large. The purpose of Riyazat is not to obtain spiritual gifts, to open the gates of the angelic realms in order to receive revelations. Some people do hope for this, but they will not receive it unless Allah Most High so chooses, and He chooses whomever He wishes. Rather, the purpose of discipline is to remove one's character, to adopt good morals, to be in harmony with the divine order, and to become a human being as Allah Ta'ala meant us to be. When people become what they are meant to be, the material life and physical being are clearly affected. They feel fresh, strong, vital, conscious, happy, and at peace. The spiritual sustenance one receives in this way is much more tasty and nourishing than ordinary food. In fact, the people blessed with this state are often neither hungry nor thirsty, and despite that, may even gain weight, as some of us do during Ramadan. To reduce the satisfaction and pleasures of the flesh, food, fun, fashionable clothes, sex, seduction, and the sleep of heedlessness, depravity, violation, and imagination, we have to fear Allah rather than fearing our egos. For fear is the principal thing that paralyzes us, that prevents us from attempting to escape from our miserable state of slavery to our egos. It is the strongest influence of our egos over us. They immobilize us with the fear of failing, fear of poverty, fear of people, fear of abandonment by society, by our wives or husbands or by our children, fear of retribution, punishment, and loneliness, fear of being hurt, and ultimate fear of death. The ego says, "Obey me. Be a hypocrite and a liar and a cheater, greedy and ambitious, and step on other people so that you will be successful and respected. Be a miser, keep your money and your knowledge to yourself, and don't care if others die of need, for otherwise you may find yourself in need like them. Be people so that they know you are strong, then you will be safe. Eat well, dress well, live in big houses, be haughty and arrogant, so that you will be prominent. Advertise yourself in the newspapers and on TV so that you won't be forgotten, but immortal. Is it not freedom from these fears that most of us live for? If only we would listen to the wishes of our Creator in the way that we listen to the wishes of our ego, if we spent the same effort and obedience upon doing what He guarantees will provide us peace and felicity in this world and in the hereafter, we would be saved. And we would not regret it afterwards, as we often do when we obey our egos. Woe to the fool who is tricked by his private devil. Where are the pharaohs and the Nimrods and the Hitlers? Where are the rich and famous who have killed themselves out of despair? Your ego is the most cursed of all temporal creations, but is still God's creation. Like all poisonous things, it has a function. Scorpion's poison is also a medicine. If you oppose the devil, he can lead you to salvation. The more you leave the falsehood of imagination, the closer you get to truth. The one who is far from truth is unloved by Allah. The one who is near to truth is loved by Allah. Whoever fears Allah is feared by all, and whoever is loved by Allah is loved by all. May Allah save us all from the tyranny of our egos. Ameen. Bi hurmati Sayyidina Mursaleen Taha wa Yasin. Riyazat, semicolon, discipline. I didn't look, but I suppose it should be on the website. I hope. I just go through all my old books, and I have notebooks filled with Bubba's old papers, and I skim through them in preparation, and I try to find things that might be helpful. But the situation is this is the things that Bubba has been talking to us about anyways. So nothing is really new, just a continual reminder. Is perhaps the most important part of our path is to resist the temptations and be aware of the ego and what it's doing, and to discipline it. These are things that Bubba has been talking to us about for quite a long time, but even more so. I mean, even during Ramadan, you know, he made jokes about the ego, and he talked to us. I mean, this is even the last night before he left, just before Eid, in a long conversation with us about the ego. So, and to keep it going, and furthermore, Maher is not here. What does Eid mean?
Eid.
Feast.
Does it not mean to return?
Return to God.
Return. So we went through the Eid, and I was once told that Eid meant to return. But we don't want to return to the state that we were in before Ramadan. Hopefully we received some kind of benefit. We were able to look at ourselves. We were able to see some of the difficulties that we went through during Ramadan and made some effort to change ourselves. To look at yourself and to be introspective. This is sort of, when you do that, you're actually already taking yourself out of the state of Nafsi Amara. When you begin to look at yourself and to create and to recognize these things. So it's a good exercise to always contemplate these kinds of things, especially your ego. It's a very difficult, it's very tricky, but it can be done, as we've seen. Any questions? No questions. Good. I'm off the hook. So that's it. We'll have, inshallah, we're waiting to see how things develop. We're waiting for Murat, who's coming from a wedding, and then we'll see if he can get here on time. We'll do the zikr before the night prayer and try to have an early night. If not, we'll have a late night. We'll see. No questions. Not one. Okay. I can answer any question you got. Ready? I don't know is an answer. Didn't say I knew all the answers. I just said I could answer any question. So Eid, does it not mean to return? The connotation is about feasting, but you have Eid, you don't.
Not Eid, Iyadah will. Iyadah is, to return.
To return.
Not Eid.
Yeah, but after all of this effort.
It's the same root as return.
Same root.
Because also Eid means it comes.
So the whole thing is that we don't want to hopefully return back to where we were before Ramadan started. Hopefully we did something and can see something of ourselves. It's a great time in Ramadan for inner reflection. So, and to do something about it. To remove something that shouldn't be there. To control the ego. Because we never really know, when we're going to die. So our business is preparation for that. So,
I have a question.
Say he's returning.
Who's? He's on his way.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about the meaning of Eid.
Late.
Returning.
Yeah.
To return.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it a whole paragraph or things?
It's a pretty long definition.
I see. Okay. I don't see anything.
Oh, I found a source saying that it's the name Eid. Eid is return, and it's used. Reason is it comes every year with new happiness.
The point is to return, but in a new state, in a cleaner state, to return refreshed and, you know, having purified yourself, but certainly not to go back to the state you were in beforehand. But we do have to go back, and I mean, our life is interrupted. You know, it's very interesting to take a look at Islam. You're requested, we're asked by Allah Ta'ala to interrupt our day 5 times. Well, 5 times a day we have to stop and think and make our prayers and consider our sins and perform our obligations. Then you think in the next step is, you know, once a year, right, you have to interrupt your habits again, your daily habits, your annual habits, and you have to do the fast for a month. And then Allah Ta'ala turns and He asks us to interrupt our lives and go and make the pilgrimage once in a lifetime, if we have the means. So these interruptions of the habits, and you know, this process of not going back, but with a pure form of thinking and feeling, and hopefully less attachment to the things that we were attached to before. Follow? So yeah, you do sort of return, but you're returning, you know, you're returning in a different state, hopefully. And the concept about talking about it like this is hopefully we can hold on to that and not slip back into our old habits of doing things. We go with hopefully better knowledge of ourselves. This is really what Sufism is about. The reduction of the ego. Piety. Wahab.
Yeah, when Baba talks about ego, that when he created the ego thousands of years, when he asked him, who are you? And he was like very rude, saying that I'm I and you're you.
Yeah.
And then, but was that state was just before we are created, like before that Adam was created? This one question. The other one is that I have.
Well, let me answer your first one. Okay. I don't know. Next.
Is it? I'm sure that you know something to share with me. The next one would be. Is it just us that we have? Is it just for the human being, or the angels also have egos, but they're basically in control of all of them?
When I get to talk to one, I'll ask. I think that they have some kind of character. If they had an ego, that they might. I mean, if they have egos, I don't know. If they have egos, their egos are trained to be submissive, because they don't protest, they don't revolt against Allah. They follow. They're obedient. You know, they have set assignments, and they carry out those assignments, you know, without argument, without question. You know? I mean, angels of all kinds of beings, all kinds of angels that have all kinds of things to do. You know, some come here, some sit on your shoulders, others just revolve around the Arsh Allah and just, some make the Tawheed all day, some sit and recite Subhanallah. Angels have all kinds of different responsibilities. Some come down or sent down to check out different things, different people, different situations, and then they go back. You know, the work of the angels is immense, what they're assigned to do. But then they're assigned, and they follow without revolt and without rebellion. It's not whether they have an ego. I don't know. I mean, I think it's... I can't even guess. I wouldn't want to venture a guess. I just have to tell you that I don't know. So... So now, if you were a thinking person, well, you would say, well, the Shaitan was an angel, or they thought, some say that he was, and he revolted. But Allah Ta'ala is all-knowing. He's the wise one. He knew in advance what was going to happen, and he was created that way for a reason, so that he could eventually be kicked out and come down here and bother us. So... interesting how the plan works out. But I mean, you think about it. You think about the creation for just a minute. You know, just think about the creation. Everything happened all at once. God didn't create creation, said, oops, I don't like that. Let me go back and change that. Everything was perfect at one moment. It all, if you look at all of the cosmos and the environment around us, nature, everything fits perfectly into place. He did. There was no trial and error. He didn't tinker with it. It just happened. If you look at the way things have come in creation, if you take time to think about these things, which is actually something that I was more or less studying during the course of the week, the business of fikr, thinking, and akal, intelligence. Mm-hmm. But we don't spend enough time, really, and Allah speaks a lot about this. It's a very important subject, to take the time to look at the universe, whether it's your inner universe, the outer universe, the simple small world in which we live in. We go to work in New York City, we come home, you know, how all of these things, you know, what do? You drive in, you take the bus, but everything fits together, you know. If you don't get annoyed with the traffic that you're stuck in, you'll see how everything is connected. And if you watch it carefully, and you know, if you watch everything very closely, you'll see every bit of everything is fitted together so neatly, so nicely. It's amazing.
Yeah,
just to sit back and look at Allah's creation. I mean, you can ask me, well, why did Allah paint the sky blue? I don't know. Some scientist may know. But it's amazing just to look up at the clouds and see each one all the time is different from the one coming behind it. All of human beings from the beginning to now are all completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Even identical twins, there's differences between them. Nothing is identical. You know, your fingerprints, your eyes, nature. Just, I mean, it's amazing just to take a time to look at nature. And then what do you realize? You realize His majesty. Why am I talking like this? Because both Baba and Yodar Baba, they say, see the attributes. So when you can take a look at nature like that, and you look and you try to, you find, what attribute is this? Ah, this is maybe Ismi Jalal. Or if you look at the blue sky and you think it's beautiful, you say, Ismi Jalal, Ismi Latif. You see these attributes in the world around you. And when you can begin to see that, this is how you really begin to really begin to understand your Creator. And then if you become awed by it, then it's, you know, it, then it becomes, and you become motivated to want to be more, inshallah, you become more motivated to be in obedience when you can see the power behind all of these things. So. to be obedient. That's what he asks of us. But we fail. We fail continuously. Shall we do our duty? Is it now a